The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mary Grace Payden for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Religion in the News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Associated Press. Our first article was published on December 18 and written by Thomas Adamson, entitled Symbol of Rebirth from Fire Tops Notre Dame in Paris. Notre Dame Cathedral got its rooster back Saturday in a pivotal moment for the Paris Landmarks restoration. The installation by a crane of a new golden rooster, reimagined as a dramatic phoenix with licking, flamed feathers, goes beyond being just a weather vane atop the cathedral spire. It symbolizes resilience amid destruction after the devastating April 2019 fire, as restoration officials also revealed an anti-fire misting system is being knitted out under the cathedral's roof. Chief architect Philippe Villeneuve, who designed this new rooster, stated that the original rooster's survival signified a ray of light in the catastrophe, that there was hope, that not everything was lost. The beauty of the old battered rooster expressed the cry of the cathedral's suffering in flames, Villeneuve said. He described the new work of art, approximately half a meter long and gleaming in the December sun behind Notre Dame Cathedral, as his phoenix. Villeneuve elaborated on the new rooster's significance, saying, "Since the fire, we have worked on this rooster, the successor, which sees the flame carried to the top of the cathedral as it was before, more than 96 meters from the ground. It is a fire of resurrection." In lighthearted comments, the architect said that the process of design was so intense, he might have to speak to his therapist about it. Before ascending to its perch, the rooster, a French emblem of vigilance and Christ's resurrection, was blessed by Paris Archbishop Laurent Ulrich in a square behind the monument. Ulrich placed sacred relics in a hole inside the rooster's breast, including fragments of Christ's crown of thorns and remains of St. Denis and St. Genevieve, infusing the sculpture with religious importance. The rooster's installation, crowning a spire reconstructed from Eugène Viollet-le-Duc's 19th-century design, is a poignant reminder of its medieval origins as a symbol of hope and faith. Its long-standing association with the French nation since the Renaissance further adds to its historical and cultural significance, marking a new chapter of renewal and hope for Notre Dame and the French people. Now an article published on December 5, written by Karim Chehaheb, entitled Lebanon's Christians Feel the Heat of Climate Change in Its Sacred Forest and Valley. Bishareh, Lebanon. Majestic cedar trees towered over dozens of Lebanese Christians gathered outside a small, mid-19th century chapel hidden in a mountain forest to celebrate the Feast of the Transfiguration, the miracle where Jesus Christ, on a mountaintop, shined with light before his disciples. The sunset's yellow light coming through the cedar branches bathed the leader of Lebanon's Maronite church, Patriarch Bishareh Al-Rey, as he stood at a wooden podium and delivered a sermon. Then the gathering sang hymns in Aramaic and Arabic. For Lebanon's Christians, the cedars are sacred, these tough evergreen trees that survive the mountain's harsh, snowy winters. They point out with pride that Lebanon cedars are mentioned 103 times in the Bible. The trees are a symbol of Lebanon, pictured at the center of the national flag. The iconic trees in the country's north are far from the clashes between Hezbollah militants and Israeli troops along the Lebanon-Israel border in recent weeks, against the backdrop of the Israel-Hamas war. The Lebanese government says Israel's use of white phosphorus and other incendiary weapons has burned tens of thousands of olive trees and other crops in the border area. And impoverished Lebanese farmers fear the shells have contaminated their soil. But the long-term survival of the cedar forest is in doubt for another reason. As rising temperatures due to climate change threaten to wipe out biodiversity and scar one of the country's most iconic heritage sites for its Christians. The lush Cedars of God Forest, some 2,000 meters above sea level, near the northern town of Bishareh, is part of a landscape cherished by Christians. The preserve overlooks the Kadisha Valley, Aramaic for sacred, where many Christians took refuge from persecution over Lebanon's tumultuous history. One of the world's largest collections of monasteries remains hidden among the thick trees, caves, and rocky outcroppings along the deep 35-kilometer valley. The United Nations Culture Agency, UNESCO, in 1998 listed both the cedar forest and the valley as World Heritage Sites. They've become popular destinations for hikers and environmentalists from around the world. A growing number of Lebanese of all faiths visit as well, seeking fresh air away from the cities. People from all religions visit here, not just Christians, even Muslims and atheists, said Hani Tak, a Maronite Christian priest, as he showed a crowd of tourists around the St. Elisha Monastery. But we as Christians, this reminds us of all the saints who lived here, and we come to experience being in this sacred dimension. Environmentalists and residents say the effects of climate change, exacerbated by government mismanagement, pose a threat to the ecosystem of the valley and the cedar forest. 30 or 40 years from now, it's quite possible to see the Kadisha Valley's biodiversity, which is one of the richest worldwide, become much poorer. Sharbay Tak, an environmental engineer and activist in Bishareh, unrelated to Hani Tak, told the Associated Press. Lebanon for years has felt the heat of climate change, with farmers decrying lack of rain and forest fires wreaking havoc on pine forests north of the country, similar to blazes that have scorched forests in neighboring Syria and nearby Greece. Residents across much of the country, struggling with rampant electricity cuts, could barely handle the summer's soaring heat. Temperatures have been above 30 degrees Celsius or 86 degrees Fahrenheit in Bishareh, not uncommon among Lebanese coastal cities, but unusual for the mountainous northern town. Nuns in the medieval Kanubin Monastery, perched on the side of a hill in the Kadisha Valley, fanned themselves and drank water in the shade of the monastery's courtyard. They reminisced about when they could sleep comfortably on summer nights without needing electricity. Already there are worrying signs of the impact on the cedars and Kadisha. Warmer temperatures have brought larger colonies of aphids that feed on the bark of cedar trees and leave a secretion that can cause mold, Sharbay Tak said. Bees normally remove the secretion, but they have become less active. Aphids and other pests also are lasting longer in the season and reach higher altitudes because of warmer weather. Such pests threaten to stunt or damage cedar growth. Tak worries that if temperatures continue to change like this, cedars at lower altitudes might not be able to survive. Fires are becoming more of a potential danger. Cedar trees usually grow at an altitude from 700 up to 800 meters above sea level. Tak's organization has planted some 200,000 cedars over the years at higher altitudes and in areas where they were not present. Some 180,000 of those have survived. Is it climate change or whatever it is happening in nature that these cedars are able to survive at 2,100 to 2,400 meters? Tak asked, while checking on a grove of cedars on a remote hilltop. Local priests and environmental activists have urged Lebanon's government to work with universities to do a wide-ranging study on temperature changes and the impact on biodiversity. But Lebanon has been in the throes of a crippling economic crisis for years. State coffers are dried up, and many of the country's top experts are rapidly seeking work opportunities abroad. There's nothing today call the state. The relevant ministries, even with the best intentions, don't have the financial capabilities anymore, Bashari Mayor Freddie Kairouz said. He said he and mayors of nearby towns have asked residents to help with conservation initiatives and Lebanese diaspora abroad to help with funding. The Maronite Church has strict rules to protect the Cedars of God Forest, including keeping development out. Kiosks, tourist shops, and a large parking lot have been kept far away from the forest. We don't allow anything that is combustible to be brought into the sacred forest, said Sharbay Makhlouf, a priest at Bashari St. Saba Cathedral. The Friends of the Cedar Forest Committee, to which Talk belongs, has been looking after the cedar trees for almost three decades with the church's support. It has installed sensors on cedar trees to measure temperature, wind, and humidity, watching for worsening conditions that could risk forest fires. Below the forest in the Kadisha Valley, Talk points to other concerns. In particular, the spread of cypress trees threatens to crowd out other species, breaking the equilibrium that we had in this valley, he said. We've seen them increase and tower over other species, whether it's taking sunlight, wind, or expanding their roots, he said. It will impact other plants, birds, insects, and all the reptile species down there. Steps to protect the valley have actually hurt its biodiversity by removing human practices that had been beneficial, Talk said. In the past, herders grazing their goats and other livestock in the valley helped prevent the spread of invasive species. Their grazing also reduced fire hazards, as did local families collecting dead wood to burn in the winter. But residents left the valley when it became a heritage site, and the Lebanese government implemented strict regulations. Few live there now, other than a handful of priests and nuns. Trees have overtaken places where people lived and farmed, Talk said. Now a fire could move from one end of the valley to the other. Sitting in a cave near the Kanubin Monastery, Father Hani Talk listened to the variety of birds chirping in the valley. He said he believes in the community's faith and awareness of nature, ingrained since their ancestors took refuge there. When you violate that tree, you're intruding on a long history and possibly the future of your children, he said. Now an article published on December 18 and written by Nicole Winfield, Cardinal is convicted of embezzlement in big Vatican financial trial, sentenced to 5.5 years. Vatican City. A Vatican tribunal on Saturday convicted a cardinal of embezzlement and sentenced him to 5.5 years in prison in one of several verdicts handed down in a complicated financial trial that aired the city state's dirty laundry and tested its justice system. Cardinal Angelo Becciu, the first cardinal ever prosecuted by the Vatican Criminal Court, was absolved of several other charges, and nine other defendants received a combination of guilty verdicts and acquittals among the nearly 50 charges brought against them during a 2.5-year trial. Becciu's lawyer, Fabio Viglione, said he respected the sentence but would appeal. Prosecutor Alessandro Didi said the outcome showed we were correct. The trial focused on the Vatican Secretariat of State's €350 million investment in developing a former Harrods warehouse into luxury apartments. Prosecutors alleged Vatican monsignors and brokers fleeced the Holy See of tens of millions of euros in fees and commissions, and then extorted the Holy See for 15 million euros to cede control of the building. Becciu, the first ever cardinal to be prosecuted in the Vatican's criminal court, was accused of embezzlement-related charges in two tangents of the London deal and faced up to 7 years in prison. In the end, he was convicted of embezzlement stemming from the original investment of 200 million euros in a fund that bought into the London property, as well as for his 125,000 euro donation of Vatican money to a charity run by his brother in Sardinia. He was also convicted of using Vatican money to pay an intelligence analyst, who in turn was convicted of using the money for herself. The trial had raised questions about the rule of law in the city-state and Francis's power as absolute monarch, given that he wields supreme legislative, executive, and judicial authority, and had exercised it in ways the defense says jeopardized a fair trial. The defense attorneys did praise Judge Giuseppe Pignatone's even-handedness and said they were able to present their arguments amply. But they lamented the Vatican's outdated procedural norms that gave prosecutors enormous leeway to withhold evidence and otherwise pursue their investigation nearly unimpeded. Prosecutors had sought prison terms from 3 to 13 years and damages of over 400 million euros to try to recover the estimated 200 million euros they say the Holy See lost in the bad deals. In the end, the tribunal acquitted many of the suspects of many of the charges, but ordered the confiscation of 166 million euros from them and payment of civil damages to Vatican offices of 200 million euros. One defendant, Becciu's former secretary, Monsignor Mauro Corlini, was acquitted entirely. The trial was initially seen as a sign of France's financial reforms and willingness to crack down on alleged financial misdeeds in the Vatican, but it had something of a reputational boomerang for the Holy See, with revelations of vendettas, espionage, and even ransom payments to Islamic militants. The Secretariat of State, for example, sought damages to fund a marketing campaign to try to repair the reputational harm it says it incurred. Even the Vatican Communications Department said the trial itself had been a stress test for the legal system. Our final article is an excerpt from one published by the Associated Press on December 17, entitled "Black American Solidarity with Palestinians is Rising and Testing Long-Standing Ties to Jewish Allies." Sidney Wallace, a black Jewish community activist, never felt compelled to travel to Israel, though "next year in Jerusalem" was a constant refrain at her Chicago synagogue. The 39-year-old said she had plenty to focus on at home, where she frequently gives talks on addressing anti-black sentiment in the American Jewish community and dismantling white supremacy in the U.S. "I know what I'm fighting for here," she said. That all changed when she visited Israel and the West Bank at the invitation of a Palestinian-American community organizer from Chicago's South Side, along with 24 other black Americans and Muslim, Jewish, and Christian faith leaders. The trip, which began September 26, enhanced Wallace's understanding of the struggles of Palestinians living in the West Bank under Israeli military occupation. But, horrifyingly, it was cut short by the unprecedented October 7 attacks on Israel by Hamas militants. In Israel's ensuing bombardment of the Gaza Strip, shocking images of destruction and death seen around the world have mobilized activists in the U.S. and elsewhere. Wallace and a growing number of Black Americans see the Palestinian struggle in the West Bank and Gaza reflected in their own fight for racial equality and civil rights. The recent rise of protest movements against police brutality in the U.S., where structural racism plagues nearly every facet of life, has connected Black and Palestinian activists under a common cause. But that kinship sometimes strains the more than century-long alliance between Black and Jewish activists. From Black American groups that denounced the U.S. backing of Israel's occupation of Palestinian territory, to Black protesters demonstrating for the Palestinians' right to self-determination, some Jewish Americans are concerned that support could escalate the threat of anti-Semitism and weaken Jewish-Black ties fortified during the Civil Rights Movement. We are concerned, as a community, about what we feel is a lack of understanding of what Israel is about and how deeply October 7 has affected us, said Bob Kaplan, executive director of the Center for Shared Society at the Jewish Community Relations Council of New York. Anti-Semitism has to be seen as a reprehensible form of hate, as any other form of hate is, he said. Anti-Semitism is as real to the American Jewish community and causes as much trauma and fear and upset to the American Jewish community as racism causes to the Black community, or anti-Asian feeling causes to the Asian community, or anti-Muslim feeling causes in the Muslim community. But, he added, many Jews in the U.S. understand that Black Americans can have an affinity for the Palestinian cause that doesn't conflict with their regard for Israel. According to a poll earlier this month from the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research, Black adults were more likely than white and Hispanic adults to say the U.S. is too supportive of Israel, 44% compared to 30 and 28% respectively. However, Black Americans weren't any more likely than others to say the U.S. is not supportive enough of the Palestinians. Generational divides also emerged, with younger Americans more likely to say the U.S. is too supportive of Israel, according to the poll. Even within the Jewish American community, some younger and other progressive Jews tend to be more critical of some of Israel's policies. Black American support for the Palestinian cause dates back to the Civil Rights Movement through prominent left-wing voices, including Malcolm X, Stokely Carmichael, and Angela Davis, among others. More recent rounds of violence, including the 2021 Israel-Hamas war and now Israel's unprecedented bombing campaign against Gaza, shown live on social media, have deepened ties between the two movements. This is just the latest generation to pick up the mantle, the latest Black folks to organize, build, and talk about freedom and justice, said Ahmad Abuznaid, the director of the U.S. Campaign for Palestinian Rights. During a week-long truce between Israel and Hamas as part of the recent deal to free dozens of hostages seized by Hamas militants, Israel released hundreds of Palestinian prisoners and detainees. Many were teenagers who had recently been picked up in the West Bank for minor offenses like stone throwing and had not been charged. Some Black Americans who watched the Palestinian prisoner release and learned about Israel's administrative detention policy, where detainees are held without trial, drew comparisons to the U.S. prison system. While more than two-thirds of jail detainees in the U.S. have not been convicted of a crime, Black people are jailed at more than four times the rate of white people, often for low-level offenses, according to studies of the American judicial system. Americans like to talk about being innocent until proven guilty, but Black folks are predominantly and disproportionately detained in the U.S., regardless of whether anything has been proven. And that's very similar to Israel's administrative detention, said Julian Rose, an organizer with a Black-run bail fund in Atlanta. Rami Nasashibi, executive director of the Inner City Muslim Action Network, invited Wallace and the others to take part in the trip called Black Jerusalem, an exploration of the sacred city through an African and Black American lens. They met members of Jerusalem's small Afro-Palestinian community, Palestinians of Black African heritage, many of whom can trace their lineage in the Old City back centuries. Our Black brothers and sisters in the U.S. suffered from slavery, and now they suffer from racism, said Musa Ku, executive director of the African Community Society, Jerusalem, whose father immigrated to Jerusalem from Chad in 1941 and whose mother is Palestinian. We suffer from the Israeli occupation and racist policies. The Americans and the Israelis are conducting the same policies against us and the Black Americans, so we should support each other, Ku said. Nasashibi agreed, saying, "My Palestinian identity was very much shaped and influenced by Black American history. I always hoped that a trip like this would open up new pathways that would connect the dots, not just in a political and ideological way," he said, "but between the liberation and struggles for humanity that are very familiar to us in the U.S. During the trip, Wallace was dismayed by her own ignorance of the reality of Palestinians living under Israeli occupation. "Being there made me wonder if this is what it's like was like to live in the Jim Crow era in America," Wallace said. Camila Asaguera, who grew up in an African-American Muslim community in Brooklyn, New York, said the trip opened her eyes. We have run out of time for today's episode of Religion in the News. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mary Grace Payden, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Religion in the News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.